Welcome to the Lion's Mane Podcast, episode 34. Today we're talking about all things nutrition, food, diets, eating. How should we consume food as athletes? How should we change our consumption of food when maybe we aren't training as much? So maybe as the seasons and cycles change, as we move from competitive seasons into transitional and preparatory phases, or even just when, you know, coronavirus hits and you have to go into lockdown and suddenly you aren't training 2 to 3 times a day, 12 times a week, you know? So today we have Bree Collette. She's a nutritionist and a freaking awesome coach, and she's joining us to give us the lowdown all about nutrition and intuitive eating for athletes. Stay tuned. Let's get it poppin'. Bree, bilingual queen. I'm so excited to have you on the show. It's been a long time coming. I've gotten so many messages asking about how do we eat in times of pandemic? How can athletes eat more healthfully, not just from a nutritional, like caloric intake sense? What are we intaking more in the sense of how can we mentally do that better for health, wellness, overall well-being, but also for performance, because obviously that's what we're going for. And there's no better person to have on the show to talk about this than you, because you can come at it with all your amazing dietitian knowledge and also having been a collegiate athlete. And I'm so excited that you're here. So please tell us who you are.
Oh, thanks for that awesome intro. So hi, my name's Bree. I am bilingual. I speak French. Brienne is my name. What?
It was actually your first language, right?
Yeah. Actually, both my parents, both families are French Canadian. So there you go.
Slay. Not a trace of it in your voice. So.
Oh yeah, actually, a lot of people don't know, but my sister has a very French name, so when people meet her for the first time, they know, and then they assume that I also speak French. But anyways, I'm Bree. I'm a dietitian and former college athlete. So you guys can't see, but I have this like really embarrassing picture of me behind me playing volleyball. So I played college volleyball, university ball here in Canada. I am somebody who, you know, loved volleyball from a very young age. I played all sports in high school. I was that person, tall. So obviously basketball was a must, even though I was absolutely terrible.
Hello, we love a stereotype moment.
I'm somebody who wasn't necessarily your average volleyball player. I was somebody who, you know, had to focus a lot on skill because I was actually like, considering I'm tall, I was actually kind of short for a volleyball player at the university level. So I was somebody who wasn't the stereotypical body type of a volleyball player. So I had to focus a lot on skill. Obviously, food and weight and body image were issues for me as an athlete. And so that's kind of what brought me into the nutrition field, because I was so passionate about changing my body, which is not maybe the best decision into how to get into nutrition. But at the time, that's what I was really worried about. So now that I've healed my relationship with food and my body, that's what I help women with. So I help women, not necessarily only athletes, but women in general, you know, feel their bodies in a way that feels good to them, but then also not hating their bodies at the same time, which is very, very difficult, especially I know firsthand, living in spandex, not the easiest, and tight jerseys can be very difficult and a lot of eyes on your body, especially when you're competing. So it's something that I just am so passionate about, making sure that women are supported and uplifted instead of being brought down by their bodies and, you know, how food can be so good for you, but also very obsessive, and how to find the balance between the two.
So let's start there, because that's fascinating that you put that down. So I'm going to pick it up.
Okay.
What is it about sports and performance and that like competitive mindset that gets us so hung up on food and the specifics of it, like the numbers? Is it just because it's such a numbers game in sports?
You know, I think people see nutrition as an advantage over their competition in a way. You know, if I can recover better, then I'll be stronger, I'll perform better, or, you know, it's part of the competitive advantage for a lot of people. And I think that myself, nutrition wasn't on my radar in terms of performance until much later, after college, actually. And I actually had this regret of wishing I would have been more interested in nutrition for sport at that time in my life, because I'm like, oh, I might have been a better volleyball player had I, you know, eaten a little bit better, had more vegetables in my life, or whatever, right? Like it goes beyond health for athletes. And you're right, it's like this competitive advantage where it's like, what can I do to be better? I think athletes just have this drive to improve in all areas of life, and like with their performance being at the top. And so nutrition is just part of that puzzle that they, it's something that you can also control, you know, like you can't control genetics. You can't necessarily control a lot of other situations that impact your sport career. And nutrition is just one of those things that you have literally full control over day to day, which can then create obsession, but it is in your control, right?
True. Very true. And do you look back on your collegiate career and see like signs of not eating disorder, but disordered eating, like amongst yourself and other athletes? Because I look back on mine and think very often like, wow, some of those discussions, some of the ways that we picked at each other and picked at different foods and things like that, just even those mindsets were not necessarily eating disorders, but just like a very disordered and distasteful way of looking at food or approaching the relationship with food. Like mm-hmm. the concept of this is a bad food for a soccer player. Like, what's a bad food?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, thinking back in my career, there's a few things that stick out in terms of, you know, when you're freshly 18. So in the collegiate system here, you can play for 5 years. So in my first year, I had fifth year players playing with me, and watching the way that they ate. Definitely impacted me. And I was like, she just had a can of tuna and a Diet Coke. Like, that's it for like a lunch. And to me,
eating
being
like a bird.
And I'm just like, here I am stuffing my face with like a sandwich and granola bars and all kinds of stuff and being like, how? And but her performance being much better than mine, thinking that's maybe what I should do. So I think it's very impressionable, especially in a team sport environment where you see other people with disordered behaviors. And if you see that their performance is good, even though you might not know what's going on inside, you kind of relate that with something that you should be doing or you should take on. So I think it's very, especially in that team sport or like training with other people, is very sensitive. You know, I think we learn a lot from seeing what other people are doing, especially in sport when we see people who are performing better than us doing something that's different. And that definitely applies to nutrition. And so, yeah, that was one moment that definitely sticks out for me that I was like, oh, maybe I'm doing something wrong. And that's, you know, too many carbs or whatever it is. And yet athletes, your carbs are your friends. So that was one lesson that I learned that I had to unlearn. And I couldn't function like that, right? So I think it's also, you know, we don't, at that age, I didn't recognize the individuality in terms of my nutrition might look different than somebody else's. And so that it can be easily disordered when you see other people doing disordered behaviors. And I think in sport, it's pretty rampant. So that was one of them. Although I think, you know, later on in my collegiate career, I just knew that I don't know. It was like my issue was more with overeating. So it wasn't necessarily that I struggled with kind of that other side of like not eating enough. So I just ate, I overate. So for me, it was more of, I definitely had enough energy to perform. It was just now I was feeling sluggish or I wasn't digesting properly or whatever, things like that. So it was more on the other side of the spectrum for me. But I did have other coaches down the road. You know, coaches can definitely influence athletes as well in terms of, you know, you shouldn't eat this. These are the only options you can have off the menu, and creating this thought pattern of, oh, okay, these are the foods that are going to make me a good athlete. Because where I went to college, we didn't have a sport dietitian. Our coach, we didn't have strength and conditioning coaches. We didn't have other people who might have that knowledge around. So for me, it was definitely directly related to what my coach was saying. So him saying, you can't have sauce with your pasta, or you need to order this on the side, no garlic toast allowed, right? Like those kinds of things stuck with you. And some of us rebelled because we don't like authority. Yeah. But some of us really took that to heart and were like, oh my gosh, this is so bad for me. I mean, I remember my coach taking me to a grocery store and he pulled something off the shelf and was like, this is the worst thing you could ever get in the grocery store. It was bologna or something like that.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, I have a package in my fridge at my dorm right now. And I was just like, okay. And that's when you assume that something's wrong with you because you like foods that are bad. And that's when morality gets wrapped into, it's no longer about just your sport. It's like, I'm a bad person if I eat this because I picked the worst thing in the entire grocery store. So I must be a fatty or whatever it is that I had mm-hmm. told myself in my head. And to this day, I've never bought it.
Wow.
Yeah. So those things stick with you, especially at a young age like that.
Totally. I think that's a great point, especially with young athletes. Like we didn't realize how impressionable we were. Mm-hmm. And between comparing ourselves to the people we wanted to emulate, but also having authority figures like older players or captains or coaches or people who also, no shock, weren't experts in nutrition either, but we used them as, hey, your performance or your expectations rule my life. So we let them also rule our food intake. That's a great point. That's really important. So tell us then about the shift, and I'll give a little disclaimer here that we're specifically talking about court and field sport athletes, which is who I predominantly work with. So soccer players, basketball, hockey, et cetera, things of that nature. This isn't about specifically weight class sports or aesthetic sports. So like gymnastics, weightlifting, wrestling, things where you probably have a very specific meal plan that you're following anyway. We're talking in a broader sense about food, not diets, meal planning in more of a healthy way and a healthier mindset of approaching food in a more holistic way. So just wanted to throw that out there before we get into talking about intuitive eating. So can you tell us what that is and that how that works for athletes? I know that's a big question, but we got to start somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. So intuitive eating in general is an approach to food that is against diet culture. And what diet culture is essentially, you know, all the diet fads that you see. So especially for athletes, like low carb diets, not super helpful for us because carbs are definitely needed. And things like that, where you get told to eat a specific way. And so you start to follow a prescribed diet, and then you fall into this pattern of, you know, having rules and restrictions. And as athletes, that sometimes can very much be detrimental to not just your mental health and emotional health when it comes to eating, but also your performance. So intuitive eating really incorporates figuring out what works best for you. And I know that that's like the simplest version to explain it, but intuitive eating is really about listening to your internal cues, listening to your hunger and your fullness cues, which a lot of the time with dieting and with diet culture brings us to the clock, brings us to, you know, ignoring hunger because that's a good sign that we're going to be losing weight or whatever it is, right? Versus with athletes, hunger means that I need energy, I need fuel. And so I think it incorporates not just the internal physical piece of listening to how much and what food, when to eat when it comes to food, but also that mental and emotional relationship with food. So are you using food to cope with your emotions? Are you feeling deprived or restricted from the fun play foods that you are supposed to enjoy in life and the pleasurable foods that, you know, humans are supposed to get pleasure from food? So are you feeling really restricted? And then that makes you feel out of control around food, right? So there's kind of this, it's not just about the food. It's also about how you feel about the food and how what you think about the food impacts your decisions, right? So if you feel bad about eating cake, like if you think cake is bad, you're going to feel bad about eating cake, and then you're just going to eat it anyway because you already feel bad, and then you might overeat because you're just like punishing yourself for eating it, right? So there's this psychological aspect to eating that I just think isn't talked about enough. And I think with athletes, again, making choices that are supportive to your performance is wonderful, but then if you mix in this morality or that emotional piece, it can make it really difficult to make those positive decisions for yourself because you've been told that, you know, nutrition is so important for sport, which it is. But where's this balance of like actually allowing yourself to live your life and enjoying foods that you like, but then also being able to put your performance at a higher level. So I think that that's where intuitive eating can be helpful for athletes, especially during this time, because it helps you heal that emotional and mental relationship with food so that when you are making choices for performance, it's coming from self-care instead of self-punishment. I don't know if that was the best description, but
yeah, no, I think that's really important because I, working on the sports psychological side with athletes here, something to the tune of in everything, not just food, but like I'm compelled to do this or I'm obligated to do this. And I think that there's a lot of shame that runs behind that because if I don't do it, then my performance will tank or I won't get selected or somebody will judge me or somebody will be better than me, et cetera. And so I think we don't address the psychological component of things enough. And I know that there's a lot of that in food that happens in society. That's not just with athletes, but to everybody, like you work with in general, women, there's a lot of messaging and culture behind food and women and diets and norms. And yeah, I think that's great explanation. So what happens, because I often hear from athletes, I'm hungry all the time. What's with that? If I'm eating intuitively, does that mean I can eat all the time if I feel hungry?
Okay, so first of all, one of the most important things to do, especially during this time, I think people are like, well, I'm snacking all day, I'm hungry all day. And I think, you know, getting on top of emotional eating might be something to think about. You know, are you bored? Are you stressed? Are you sad? Are you lonely? right? A lot of people don't even, are you just looking for something to do, right? So sometimes
are you living through a pandemic that's going to change the phase of history forever, you know?
Right. Like, you know, everybody is stressed and emotional eating at this point. Like that's the number one thing that's come out of me working with my clients and even just my audience in general is just like, I'm just like, I just can't handle and I just turn to food. And I think there's a lot of stigma around emotional eating that people feel bad about it. Like I'm snacking all day and like, I feel really bad and guilty about it. And I'm like, okay, but it's okay to turn to food for comfort. It's just, if it's adding guilt on top of that, then that gives me a little red flag that there might be something going on here. Is it the food that you're eating that you're feeling bad about? Or is it the amount? Is it, you know what I mean? Is it the time of day you're feeling bad about? There are so many reasons that you might be feeling guilty about emotional eating. But I think that that's a really good place to start in terms of, you know, I'm hungry all the time is, are you actually hungry? Because I think we confuse hunger with cravings often. Just because you're craving something doesn't necessarily mean you're hungry. And if you're craving something because you're emotional, then that gives you an opportunity to do something else. Not to say that you can't turn to food when you're emotional or stressed or bored. It's just we don't want it to make us feel guiltier afterwards. So if we can find other coping mechanisms, if we're not actually hungry, even just to distract us for a little bit until that feeling comes down or to actually resolve that feeling, you know, what can help de-stress me? What can help make me happier or less bored? Maybe I need to go fold some laundry, whatever it is, can be helpful to actually address the emotions instead of, you know, the craving. So that's like my number one thing is that, are you actually hungry is like the check-in number one. And then if you're really good at being like, no, like my hunger is growling, then that means you need food and it's okay to eat. Right. But I think it's important to ask yourself what the cue is that you're feeling hunger. Cause it could be emotional for sure.
I had to mute myself cause I was snickering over here because actually when I get bored or stressed or whatever, my first thing is I need to go do laundry. Let me go see if I have any laundry to do. Maybe right? I can go fold it, put it in the washer. Maybe I can go clean the house. I don't know. That's my go-to thing to take care of business. I love that. So tell me about the concept of I'm hungry. Let me drink something. I hear this one a lot from athletes, interestingly enough.
The whole, I'm hungry, I need to, so I think a lot of what intuitive eating is about intention with your food choices. So at the end of the day, you get to choose what you want to do. And so I always talk about intention with my clients. And so I think here the intention is, what's the intention behind drinking instead of eating when you know it's hunger, right? Because you're not going to say, oh, I'm thirsty, let me go pee. Like, you know what I mean? Like you don't confuse other internal cues. However, hunger has been hijacked by diet culture, and a lot of people drink water to ignore hunger, to stave off hunger because they need to eat at a specific time or because they've already eaten enough today, right? Like, what is it? What's the thought that's telling you that you should be drinking water instead of honoring your hunger and eating, right? So I think it's important to ask yourself, like, what's going on here? Because for different people, water is, or thirst is an excuse to not honor their hunger. And I think that people have different reasons as to why they're doing that. But I think the most common is, oh, like if I drink water, the hunger will go away. So then I won't eat as much. So then I will lose weight. So if that's kind of the mentality that you're having, I think that it's important to address the intention behind it.
This is so good. My brain is like the camera and I keep staring off into space. I don't want you to think I'm uninterested. My brain is working like 1,000 miles a minute. This is so good. We just get so much messaging about this and never even think it through. So I think the fact that you're even forcing us to think about like what messages about food have you received and actually consider the fact that there is no morality tied to food like is pretty great. So I got a bunch of messages, of course, from athletes asking about now that we're in quarantine, am I supposed to eat less now that I'm moving less? I only have training once a day or seven times a week instead of 12 times a week or whatever. Do I need to be eating less calories or do I need to be eating less carbs? What's your approach to that from an intuitive perspective? Is it still like, you know, eat when you want, what you want, and at the rate and caloric density that you want, or how do you approach that?
Yeah, so there's a few things that I think we can chat about here, which comes back to like that whole I'm hungry all the time thing. I think that athletes are used to being hungry all the time, especially if you're used to having a very high activity load, right? Like if you're if you're very active, you're burning lots of calories, you need lots of fuel. So I think one of the things with what's going on right now, and maybe some people taking a very big cut in their activity level, is that, you know, you don't actually need to eat as much food. And I think that that's scary for a lot of people because they're just used to eating all the time because they're so hungry. Like, I just remember being like, give me the food. Like, I was just hungry, lots of snacks.
Ravenous.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think this is a perfect opportunity for you to get in tune with what your body is saying. I think at this point in the pandemic, most people have already seen enough time where their body's probably adjusted. It's just that we're not really good at listening. So if you're used to just being like, eat, eat, eat all the time because you're super, super active, you might not have as good of the listening skill to what does my hunger and fullness actually feel like in terms of like now that I'm less active. So I think, you know, a few things I would suggest is to, especially if athletes are used to just like cleaning their plate, which is something that a lot of people struggle with outside of the athletic world, is to really just check in, start asking yourself, how full am I? How much food is making me feel good? How long is this meal, this type of meal, lasting for me? Because that's the other thing too, is that when you were super, super active before, that food and that energy went through you much quicker, right? So now that you're less active, your digestion also is a little bit slower. So foods might actually last you longer. So if you're used to eating really often, you might not actually be needing food as often as well. So digestion is taking longer, use of energy is taking a little bit longer. So it's not that you necessarily need to change what foods you're eating, you just might need to do it less often or in smaller portions if you actually enjoy eating more frequently in the day. And this is where you get to choose what feels really good to you. I think a lot of people have this cliche of I have to eat three meals or I'll only eat snacks around my workout. But I think at this point in time, it's a really good opportunity to start figuring out what works best for my body at this activity level. So that's kind of the how much to eat piece. I think it's really a good opportunity to start to connect with your hunger cues, with your fullness cues, because that really will tell you, your body will tell you, you know, I need to eat now, I need fuel. So just like on a daily basis to figure out what that feels like. To answer the second part of your question when it comes to training and like what types of food to be eating, I think, you know, I mean, carbs are your friend. I think if you're eating less in general, it would be in all three areas, right? Like carbs, fats, proteins. If you're just eating less often, naturally that would just go down. But I wouldn't necessarily cut out carbs if you're still training. So like if you are, so there's different, depending on the type of activity you're doing, you can have emphasis on different types of food. So if you're weight training more than you were before, because that's what's available to you, then maybe focusing a little bit more on protein so you can repair those muscles and build muscle. That would be something that I would suggest. So maybe around after your workout, just focusing on a little bit more protein, that would be wonderful. If maybe you're doing more cardio now because you don't have access to a gym or something like that, so you're doing more endurance training, then maybe carbs are really important for you so that you do feel fueled throughout your workout. So that might be something that you could focus on depending on what kind of training you're doing. So again, that's not very specific, but I think that, you know, it doesn't necessarily need to change. I think that you can continue to do pre-workout, post-workout snacks if that's what you feel, if that's what feels good to you in that training session. But if your training sessions aren't as long, if they're not as intense, then maybe those snacks can be smaller. I think the post-workout snack is probably the most important, but if you, especially for recovery, and if you're not going to be eating a meal anytime soon, and the pre-workout snack, I think if you're used to doing that, and it feels really good to be fueled right before your workout, they continue to do that. But if you have a meal that's, you know, close by and you're digesting a little bit slower, right? Because you're not moving as much or not active. You know, I remember just like walking on campus so much, and then like, then you have practice. So you're really active. Whereas now you're probably just sitting at home before your workout. Right. So, you might not need a day. Yeah. So you might not need that pre-workout snack because your meal might be close enough actually to still give you that same fuel. So it's something to play around with, to see what will benefit you. Right. So I think that, I don't know, does that help answer that question?
Totally. Okay. But I think what you hammered home is, I just wrote down the word individual. Like, it's so individualized. Like, we can't go by, and I explain this all the time to athletes with their programming. It sounds like you're saying the same thing. Like, the program that I write for you, Bree, isn't going to work for me. My program isn't going to work for you. It's not going to work for your neighbor. It's not going to work for your sister. Like, it's specifically for you. So the same thing is the truth with nutrition and activity level and exactly what you need to be intaking and when. So it's our job to figure that out. Is that what I'm hearing?
A little bit. I mean, I think, you know, athletes are very, the good thing about athletes is I think they're very sensitive to feeling how good they're feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, they can tell when they feel like crap during training. They can tell when they're not pushing as hard or when their bodies are sore. I think that we're more in tune with those cues. So mm-hmm. I actually think that you're already ahead of the game a little bit in terms of interceptive awareness, which is just the term to say like recognizing what your body is telling you, being connected to your cues and connected to your body. It mm-hmm. is a skill. So I think it's just incorporating that in terms of looking at how food is making you feel. And that's just what intuitive eating is about. It really is mm-hmm. like, what makes me feel good? What makes me feel energized? What makes me feel nourished? What makes me feel like I'm performing better? Mm-hmm. And just continuing to figure that out and playing around with different things. And you're right. It's 100% different for other people. Like this girl ate a can of tuna and a Diet Coke and she was a rock star athlete. And I'm like, zero chance I would shrivel up and not be able to do anything. So like, you know, and it, that just goes down to genetics and all kinds of different things. So, yeah, I think experimentation is probably really helpful for a lot of people right now.
Wow. You're like blowing my mind right now. This is so good. So going back to, you gave us some action steps, like the checking in about the internal cues and talking about asking, like checking in, am I full? How is it going? What's my, I don't know, percentage level of my gas tank kind of thing. Now, all of us have heard, finish that goddamn plate. There are kids starving in Africa. And oh, I know you've heard that so many times. But then I also look at your story and I have so much respect. The fact that you've trained yourself to do this is so closely monitor what I put on my plate because I know that I will finish it because I'll feel bad if I don't, like, I don't want to throw out food basically. And so I'd rather put less and then have to go make more. And food, I'm somebody who I don't really like food that much. Like I don't enjoy the process of eating. So it's just kind of like, I have to do it. So it doesn't really matter to me. But then I think like, who is it going to hurt if I can't eat those last five fries? Like, the kids in Africa have nothing to do with that. That doesn't help them. It's not like less respectful about my food because I didn't eat those five fries. So can you speak to that? I know you've talked a lot about this on your stories and posts, and I have so much respect for the fact that you can do that. I think that'd be really helpful to know.
Yeah. Cleaning your plate is, I mean, even if we think about it like generationally, like where our parents and their parents came from, like a lot of what we learn about food gets passed down from generation to generation. And yeah, our grandparents, like my grandparents, lived in a time where food was scarce and cleaning your plate was like, no, like you have to. And also you probably want to because we don't know how much food we're going to get. Right. So that gets passed on to the next generation where it's like, no, like we were told to clean our plate. So you're going to get told to clean your plate. But now, and I'm just saying most of us have food availability, not saying that doesn't exist, or I know that it's definitely an issue in some parts of the world and with poverty and things like that. But typically with athletes, they do have food availability. And so we don't have that problem anymore. We have an abundance of food. And so what do we do now that we're so used to having? And it's a habit. It's just a habit of doing everything because A, you got told that there were starving kids in Africa. That's exactly what my mom would say. Two, you have to eat this before you get dessert, right? So there's also this like accomplishment to finish your plate so that you can get a reward. So there's
which
like
makes no sense. Yeah. Oh my God.
But it's true. It's true. Like it happens, right? Or there's this fear of wasting food or money. Right? So not just wasting food for the starving people, but because like you're wasting money or putting something down the drain. And so there's two things that I think is really important for this to A, break the habit and B, make it easier on yourself if you're feeling really mentally conflicted with the financial or like environmental piece or whatever it is that, so for that breaking the habit, I think exactly like you said, serving yourself less fully with the intention of being allowed to have more, because I think that if we serve ourselves less and tell us we can only eat this much, that's not helpful at all, because you'll finish being hungry and then like beating yourself up about it. And maybe binging later.
Basically you're saying really quickly, we're allowed to have seconds.
Yes. Okay. Got so it. Serving yourself less so that you create an opportunity to check in. Because a lot of people aren't, I mean, there's a lot of different things that go with mindfulness while eating, but a lot of people just aren't listening to their fullness cues as it's happening. On top of the fact that it takes a little time for the food to get to your stomach, the signals to happen, and your body to be like, oh, ding, I'm full, right? Like, it takes like 20 minutes.
And athletes don't tend to be slow eaters either.
No.
Like, inhaled, done.
I definitely am not.
Yeah, no.
Serving myself less creates an intentional break where I can check in and say, how much more do I need? Which ones do I actually want more of in terms of satisfaction? Because satisfaction also plays a key role in fullness as well, because you know, you can eat six heads of lettuce and then you'll be like, okay, well, what else? I'm full physically, but like, I'm not satisfied. So
lame.
It creates a time for you to be able to check in with yourself. What's still tasting good? What do I want more of? How much more do I need? How full am I? So it creates that opportunity for you to check in, give yourself a few minutes to figure it out, let it sit in your stomach, and then go have more if you want, or hey, maybe this is what feels good to me at this fullness level and I can be good with that. The other thing with breaking the habit, other people just practice leaving bites on their plate so that they can get the visual. You know what I mean? Like, maybe you have cooked more so you can, you know, you can like add it to that Tupperware when you're done, but like physically visually seeing those five fries, those like two bites of steak or whatever on your plate can be not for everybody. A lot of people opt for the serving less because it's so hard. It is so hard.
I'm squirming.
Yeah, for sure. But I think at a certain point in time, doing that just as a visual can be really helpful for people who just need to see that. See that there's food on my plate, feel that they're hungry, and just be like, I'm okay, I'm safe. Like, I don't need to eat that, it's okay. And give yourself that power to make that choice. So again, not for everybody.
I'll really be sitting there and looking at those two pieces of steak and being like, girl, cram it in. Like, honestly. Like,
yeah. So my favorite sentence with this is that your body is not a garbage can. So I need you to put yourself first. And I think a lot of people are like, oh, the environment, finite money, whatever, like starving kids in Africa. So they do all these things to, and they feel worse, right? Because sometimes it's a lot of food and you really overstuff yourself. You feel like crap, but you're like, oh, at least I didn't, you know, throw out two pieces of steak, right? But at the end of the day, I want you to feel your best. And if you start putting self-care and yourself first, then those decisions are easier. So I think, you know, what's going to make me feel my best right now? Throwing out those two pieces of steak, like, you have to put yourself first. And I know that that can be really difficult in terms of saving things, and people are like, well, it's not worth saving it. I'm like, do it, save it, cut up that steak and put it in your eggs the next day or something. I don't know. Right. Like, I think a lot of people are like, it's not worth it, but I think you have to say, I'm worth it. Right. Like, the way I feel is worth putting this away, saving it, or throwing it out if I feel like I am really not going to eat it the next day. And I think you just get to learn more about your body, especially during this time, how much you need, and then you can start changing your cooking accordingly and your shopping accordingly, so then you don't feel like you're wasting as much. But if you're never giving yourself the chance to figure that out or to stop at the point where you do feel full, then you might not figure out that you might never change, right? So you might continue to just buy the same amount, make the same amount, eat the same amount, right? Like, so this is just an opportunity to change that and challenge that and put yourself first.
So if you never give yourself, say that line again, if you never give yourself the chance to feel what that feels like, then you never give yourself the chance to change.
Yeah.
That's really hard for athletes who have been doing the same thing for their whole lives.
It is for really sure. Hard. I mean, I was the person who just ate whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, because I was hungry all the time. And so this was super hard for me. So 100% I get it. But I think looking at it in terms of self-care really helped me change my view on it, right? Like, I was really just punishing myself and making myself feel gross and feel overstuffed. And I was like, I deserve to feel better. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what matters most.
I've talked to a lot of nutritionists, diet experts, dietitians, et cetera, food coaches who always give out, you know, they'll give out like the diets, the food plan, whatever. And they never stop to ask like, what is good for this person psychologically? It's literally just down to the stats and numbers. And so I love that you really never talked about that. You just came at it with, yo, this is as individual as your training plan, as your sleep cycle, as your hygiene habits, and you have to figure it out and you have to take responsibility. And we really don't. We just don't. I've been an athlete for 26 years and I've never figured out this stuff. We need that extra kick in the pants. So that's really, really good. Anything else you'd like to say?
So I think, you know, with intuitive eating, a lot of people are like, well, then I'll just eat like fries and cake all day or whatever, right? So it's not to say that nutrition isn't important. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we all know that there's sport nutrition research out there to show that it does actually make an impact on your performance. Mm-hmm. It's just making those choices, again, from the intention of self-care and not in terms of punishment. So if eating that extra cookie right now is going to make you feel better emotionally and mentally, it's better to do that in that moment than to beat yourself up about it and be like eating salads for the next 5 days and being miserable.
And think right? about the cookie freaking anyway. So you might as well have just done it.
Like, yeah.
Because at the end, you're probably still going to eat the cookie after making yourself miserable.
Yeah. So I think also there's, you know, at the end of the day, athletes are still humans. And
totally.
And, you know, they deserve to also find pleasure in food. So yeah, you can definitely, you know, put your sport nutrition recommendations at the forefront of how you control your diet or whatever, or what makes you feel good. But at the end of the day, you also have to remember that you are human that has other needs outside of physical needs. You have mental, emotional needs, and sometimes food is part of that equation. And we just beat ourselves up so much about that fact that that's what I'm trying to release, that pressure. Because once you don't have pressure and you don't feel bad about enjoying those play foods, then you don't actually crave them as much, right? It's like this forbidden fruit. If you're like, I can't have this till Friday, I can't have this till Friday. Then on Friday, it's like, boom, like you lose it. Like Last Supper mentality, you overeat it. You're just like, I got to eat it all, right? So if you enjoy food more frequently, you don't have those huge moments of like, oh my God, I can't control myself. So yes, you're a human. You deserve to, you know, make sure that nutrition is supportive to your performance, but also incorporating satisfaction in little ways so that it's not this mind game when it comes to just enjoying food at your birthday or whatever, right? So,
and how you can even build in that intuitive style into diets that you already have to follow. It's freaking awesome. You are awesome, Bree. Where can the people find you online if they have questions? And guys, I have to second this. Bree and I have worked together before in various ways, and I can't recommend her services enough. So if you feel like you need a guide, a coach, I'm a coach and I have coaches for basically everything that I do. So I can't recommend enough. If food nutrition is difficult for you, contact Bree. She knows what she's talking about. I don't have anybody on here who I don't stand behind their work. So Bree, where can they find you?
I appreciate that. So super simple. On Instagram, I'm at nutritionist.brie, B-R-I. And my website is just Brianne Collette Nutrition. I'll give you that info so you can link it up. But Instagram is the best place to get a hold of me. And I would love to support you guys and help you guys. I know what it feels like. I've been there, especially with the mental, emotional stuff. And so I'm definitely passionate about helping you guys through that.
Man, you've been through everything. You've been through sport, injury, school, work, building businesses. You've run the gambit, girl.
I'm doing it all.
Yeah. Last question is, what are your top three workout songs?
Oh my God. Well, I haven't been working out that much lately because of an injury, so I'll have to think back. So is it Lemon?
Mm-hmm.
Like the Rihanna and Pharrell song?
Yeah.
I really like that one. That one gets me going. A newer one would be the Roses song.
Mm-hmm.
What else do I like? Oh, there's an old school one that I always like. Bedrock? Is it Bedrock?
Oh my God, a 2010.
That's like college. It's like, that's like college days, but it's still like, whenever it comes on, I know all the lyrics and I'm just like.
There was like 8 rappers on that track and Nicki Minaj laid down in 1 verse. And somehow we can still spit the whole thing 10 years later.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So that one like just brings back so many good memories and it's just a good beat. So I don't know, I like it.
Okay, great. So those 3 songs will be in this week's workout playlist when this comes out. So guys, if you want to catch Bree's tunes, then go to the Lion's Mane playlist on Spotify, and we will have 12 songs this week, including these 3 from Bree, and you can have a look at what she likes to work out to. So thanks again for coming on the show. I'm so grateful for your time, and I'm sure I'll have to have you back for another round of myth busting or something like that. There's so much to explain, and you're great at it, so thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really glad that I was able to share a little bit of what I do, and hopefully it was useful and helpful.
Absolutely. Bilingual queens.